Chapter 12. 888 Ralston was a townhouse in the Gold Coast, the richest area of Chicago. It was set on its own little plot, surrounded by trees that hid the house from view almost entirely. High hedges worked around the house in a small garden added to the concealment as I drove up the white pebble drive and parked the Beetle at the end of a small fleet of police cars and emergency vehicles. The strobing blue lights were almost comforting by now. I had seen them so many times that it felt, in an unsettling way, like a homecoming. Murphy had called me in early. I didn't see the forensics van yet, and only now were officers putting up yellow tape around the property. I got out of my car, dressed in my jeans, button-down shirt, and boots again, my old black duster flapping around my calves. The wind was brisk, cold. The moon was riding high overhead, barely visible through the city's haze of pollution. A chill ran down my neck and I stopped, looking at the rows and rows of elegantly illuminated hedge sculptures, flower beds, and rows of shrubbery around me. I was abruptly certain that someone was out in the darkness. I could feel eyes on me. I stared out at the night, sweeping my gaze around. I could see nothing, but I would have to bet money that there was someone out there. After a moment, the sense of being watched faded and I shivered. I shoved my hands in my pockets and walked quickly toward the townhouse. Dresden, someone called, and I looked up to see Carmichael coming down the front stairs of the townhouse toward me. Carmichael was Murphy's right hand in special investigations. Shorter than average, rounder than average, slobbier than average, and with piggier eyes than average. Carmichael was a skeptic, a doubter, and a razor-sharp cop. He came down the stairs with a soup-stained old tie and shirt sleeves. "It's about fucking time. Jesus Christ, Dresden." He wiped a hand over his sweating brow. I frowned down at Carmichael, and we went up the stairs side by side. "Well, that's the nicest greeting you've ever given me, I think," I said. "You change your mind about me being a fake?" Carmichael shook his head. "No. Still think you're full of shit with this wizard magic business. But Christ almighty, there are times when I wish you weren't." "You can never tell," I said, my voice dry. "Where's Murphy?" "Inside," Carmichael said, his mouth twisting with distaste. "You go up the stairs. The whole place belongs to this guy. Murphy figures you might know something. I'm going to stay here and bog down the feds when they show." I glanced at him. "She's still worried about looking bad for internal affairs?" Carmichael grimaced. "Those assholes at IA would be all over her if she kicked the feds out. Christ almighty, I get sick of city politics sometimes." I nodded agreement and started up the stairs. "Hey, Dresden," Carmichael said. I looked over my shoulder at him, expecting the familiar jeers and insults. He was studying me with bright, narrow eyes. "I hear things about you and Johnny Marconi. What's the deal?" I shook my head. "No deal. He's lying scum." Carmichael studied me intently and then nodded. "You ain't much of a liar, Dresden. I don't think you could keep a straight face about something like this. I believe you." "But you don't believe me when I say I'm a wizard?" I asked. Carmichael grimaced and looked away from my eyes. "Do I look like a fucking moron to you, huh? You better get upstairs. I'll make some noise when Denton and the Stepford agents get here." I turned to go and saw Murphy standing at the head of the stairs in a crisp gray business jacket and slacks, with sensible low heels and jewelry the color of steel. Her earrings seemed to be little more than bright beads of silver in her ears, which I never really noticed when she had worn her golden hair long. Murphy's earlobes were cute. She'd kill me just for thinking it. "About time, Dresden, get up here." Her voice was hard, angry. She vanished from the top of the stairway, and I took the rest of the stairs two at a time to catch up with her. The apartment, though it was too big for the word to really apply, was brightly lit and smelled very faintly of blood. Blood has a sweet sort of metallic odor. It makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, and mine snap to attention at once. There was another smell as well, maybe incense of some kind, and the fresh scent of wind. I turned down the short hall at the top of the stairs and followed Murphy into what was apparently a master bedroom, where I found the source of all the scents. There was no furniture inside the master bedroom, and it was huge. large enough to make you wince at how far you'd have to go to get to the bathroom in the middle of the night. There was no carpeting. There were no decorations on the walls. There was no glass in the huge single-pane window letting in October. The full moon shone down through it like a picture in a frame. What the room did have was blood. There was blood all over, scattered in droplets and slashed in spurts against one wall. The scarlet footprints of something like a large wolf leading in a straight line toward the shattered window. In the center of the room were the remains of a greater circle of summoning, with its three rings of symbols carefully wrought in white chalk upon the wooden floor, burning sticks of incense interspersed among the symbols of the second ring. What was left of Kim Delaney lay naked and supine on the blood-stained floor a few feet from the circle. The expression of shock and surprise on her face wouldn't change until rigor set in. Her dark, once glittering eyes stared up at the ceiling, and her lips were parted as though in the middle of an apology. A large wheel section of flesh beneath her chin was missing, and with it Kim's larynx and trachea. Bloody red meat was showing, the ragged ends of arteries and torn sections of muscle, and pale white bones gleamed at the bottom of the wound. Long rakes down her body had opened her like a Ziploc bag, leaving her covered in scarlet. Something went click in my head. Someone threw some kind of switch that had just turned off my emotions entirely and immersed me in a surreal haze. I couldn't be seeing this. It simply couldn't be real. It had to be some game or hoax in which the actors would start giggling in a few moments, unable to contain the mirth of their prank. I waited, but no one started giggling. I wiped at my forehead with my hand and found cold sweat there. My fingers began to shake. Murphy said, her voice still tight with anger. Apparently, the incense set off the fire alarm in the hall. When the fire department got here, no one answered, so they came on in. They found her up here about 8 o'clock. She was still warm. 8 o'clock, when I had been talking to the demon. Moonrise? Behind me, Murphy closed the door to the bedroom. I turned to her, away from the grisly corpse. There was anger in every inch of her, the way she glared at me.